Welcome to the Federalist Society's Practice Group podcast. The following podcast, hosted by the Federalist Society's Labor and Employment Law Practice Group, was recorded on Thursday, July 20th, 2017, during a live telephone conference call held exclusively for Federalist Society members. Welcome to the Federalist Society's Practice Group telephone conference call, as today we discuss state efforts to rein in the Americans with Disabilities Act. I'm Dean Reuter, Vice President, General Counsel, and Director of Practice Groups here at the Federalist Society. Please note that all expressions of opinion are those of the expert on today's call. Also, this call is being recorded for use as a podcast in the future. We're very pleased to welcome back Mark Brnovich, the Arizona Attorney General, to Teleforum. He's going to give us some opening remarks, about 15 to 20 minutes, talking about his efforts with regards to the Americans with Disabilities Act. But as always, we'll be looking to the audience for questions, so please have those in mind. With that, Attorney General Brnovich, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Dean, and thank you for everyone for being on the call today and giving me an opportunity to talk a little bit about a very serious issue that we are seeing spreading all across the country and how we dealt with it here in Arizona. We know that serial litigation under the Americans with Disabilities Act is a growing issue. The number of ADA lawsuits is up 150% nationwide since 2013. In Arizona alone, there was more than 2,000 of these copy and paste type lawsuits that were swamping our court system when I took office. And so one of the things that we did and our civil litigation did was look at ways that we could, as a state AG, ensure that not only justice was being done, but was there a way to make sure that lawsuits that were without merit were not clogging the system and that plaintiffs' lawyers weren't really involved in an effort to shake down small businesses. So starting in early 2016, there was an organization calling itself the Advocates for Individuals with Disabilities. As I said, they began filing hundreds and hundreds of lawsuits here in Arizona, which essentially were the same types of lawsuits, copy and paste. The lawsuits would allege very often minor violations of the Americans with Disabilities Act and the violations of the Arizona with Disabilities Act. So folks on the call may be aware that under the Americans with Disabilities Act, there are literally hundreds of pages of regulations that sometimes are the minutia of, you know, what angle a ramp must be at, how high a sign must be at, you know, what signs must say. So sometimes you'd get a business, especially maybe a small business, that would have a sign, a handicap placard sign, but it wouldn't have the necessary language such as van accessible, even though the space was clearly marked. Or that it wouldn't have the international symbol. And very often we saw complaints where people would allege that the height of the signs were insufficient. So under the ADA regulations, the bottom of a sign must be a minimum of 60 inches above the ground. So this group aid would sue even when the signs were literally just a few inches too low. And let me give you one example of the problems that were created, the tension between federal and even state law or city law. In Mesa, Arizona, they have a city ordinance that a height, no sign can exceed 72 inches. Well, because of the ADA, those signs, the handicap signs, are supposed to be 18 inches tall. So if you attempt to comply with the ADA federal regulations of having a sign 60 inches above the ground, and then you add the 18 inches of the sign would literally be 4 inches too high. So some businesses were putting the signs 4 inches lower, so they would be in compliance with the city ordinance. But of course, what that led to is them being out of compliance, even though they had the sign, even though they had the spaces with the ADA. So what we did, or what would happen is then these lawyers the group would send a demand letter to these businesses, very often small businesses operating on tight margins, asking for $5,000 in attorney fees and $5,000 in damages. And I will tell you, the moment that I had my epiphany was when a small business owner complained to our office that they had gotten one of these demand letters, and when they said, okay, I will fix the height of the sign and change it, the lawyers said, or the group said, well, that's fine, but now you owe us an extra $2,500 in fees because we've had to deal with this issue. And so I realized that this wasn't just about getting folks to comply with the ADA or the Arizona with Disabilities Act. It was more about shaking down small businesses. So they would make the group would make a demand, and regardless of the number of violations, and they would always say that they would, if the businesses would pay at least $7,500, they would drop their lawsuits. Part of the problem became for small businesses, it wasn't worth it for them to fight it because, one, the amount of money involved, and then, two, in Arizona, businesses aren't allowed to represent themselves in Superior Court. So they would have to hire a law firm, and as folks on this call probably appreciate, by the time you hire a law firm, by the time you defend yourself over a technical violation, it really doesn't become worth it. So we knew by August of 2016 that AID was publicly announcing it. They had publicly announced that it had made more than $800,000 off of settlements and that the average settlement was about $4,000. We also knew that the group was then using the money to kind of churn it back into their, you know, operation to file even more lawsuits. So what was happening is it was metastasizing, and you were seeing more and more lawsuits as they were able to shake down more and more businesses. In August of 2016, they filed 500 new cases here in Arizona, along with the 1,000 pending cases they had already had. They informed in court a state judge that they plan to file 8,000 more lawsuits in the next few months, and their goal was eventually to file 100,000 lawsuits across the entire country. So when you think about the math just here in Arizona, even though there's national implications, if they had settled every one of those 8,000 cases, you're talking about $15.6 million in fees they would have collected for themselves to continue to grow their operation, not only here in Arizona, but elsewhere. And when you think about the time value of money, the impact this had on a lot of small businesses, it was a grave issue. So our office is responsible for one of our duties is to enforce the Americans with Disabilities Act and the Arizona's version of it, the Arizona ADA. So we take these violations very, very seriously. And I want folks to know that no one, you know, is more sympathetic to meeting the challenges of folks with physical challenges than our office is. And we take all complaints very, very seriously. But what AID was doing is they weren't complying with the state law, because what they should have done is first filed the complaint with our office and allowed us an attempt to settle it or resolve the issue. So in August 2016, as I said, when they were filing all those lawsuits, they had filed literally, you know, more than 1,000 lawsuits, and yet how many complaints had they filed with our office? Zero, none, which once again to me was an indication that what they were more worried about were attorney fees than they were about making sure that people complied with the ADA or people with physical challenges, that their needs were being met. So we concluded that what was really going on was AID was abusing the law, and they were also using the legal system to enrich themselves, not to encourage compliance. So what we did is, you know, we sat down, we have a great team here, and we decided that we would file a motion to intervene in the earliest filed AID case. And what we did is we emphasized that, one, we had a unique role because of our role as the Attorney General and also the place where these complaints were supposed to be. Two, that we have an interest in ensuring that no law in the state is abused. And three, that there was an interest in preserving the separation of powers. And so the court allowed us to intervene. And once we were allowed to intervene in that first case, then we moved to consolidate all of the opening cases, arguing that the cases had common deficiencies and they presented common legal questions. Once we got the court to consolidate the cases, then we moved to stay all the open cases for consideration of all of our motions, and also filed to restrict AID from being able to file any additional lawsuits without permission of the court. So what this essentially did was, one, AID was no longer had the leverage of court deadlines and requiring small businesses to get their own lawyers to fight these things. So their settlement offers, actually, we saw them drop dramatically as we became involved in these cases. Second, by intervening and then moving to consolidate the cases, we prevented the filing of 8,000 additional lawsuits. So we thought it was very, very important that we do get involved. And of course, AID and their folks, the lawyers, they fought us from being involved, and they wanted to make sure that we were not, you know, fighting them. But I want to just briefly talk about some of the legal arguments that aided lack standing. One is the pre-suit process that they had done is what Aid was doing was they were hiring individuals that did not have any sort of physical challenges off Craigslist, and those people would basically go around to parking lots and take photos. They also used Google Maps. Then they'd take these photos and they would analyze them for any sort of technical violation, like the signs being too low or the words of the sign not having the correct verbiages on the signs. Then they would have somebody who was alleged or somebody that was had a nonprofit that dealt with folks with physical challenges to file the lawsuits on his behalf. And that nonprofit would receive a cash payment each time a lawsuit was settled. Then, so they were basically filing these lawsuits on someone's behalf who very often, or, you know, as far as we know, really never even visited these businesses. So we argued that what they were doing was insufficient to state a claim. And we also said that we believe that the case law was on the side because Aid lacked any sort of standing because they didn't actually patronize the buildings. You know, they weren't actually there. They just had someone drive by and take pictures. The alleged violations, such as, for example, the sign being too low or the sign having the incorrect verbiage, actually didn't bar access to these locations because folks with physical challenges were still able to go there and, you know, visit the locations. And the plaintiffs themselves, the plaintiff they used, didn't actually experience any sort of denial of access. And one of the decisions, federal decisions we relied upon, was the Supreme Court's recent ruling in Spokio v. Robbins, where in Spokio, a plaintiff alleged that an online service had posted inaccurate information about him. The plaintiff claimed that he was injured because the federal statute was violated, and as folks on the call may know, the Supreme Court disagreed, finding that a bare procedural violation that doesn't result in the actual harm is insufficient to have standing. So we basically made the same argument here in state court, saying that merely because Aid had alleged violations of the ADA, they did not show any sort of particularized injury, and they didn't show the necessary grounds for standing. The court agreed with us here, and what ended up happening was the court adopted a three-element test that we had argued, and they dismissed every single one of the open cases with prejudice. It was really, quite frankly, unprecedented. So in some of the cases, the defendants they had brought, Aid was occasionally sanctioned by the court, but they were really, really small in comparison to the money that Aid was making. So we thought, and we are actually in the process right now of asking for sanctions from the court to try to stop this and try to not only deter Aid, but any other group from filing and clogging our court system with frivolous lawsuits. And so we thought it was also interesting that Aid had claimed attorney fees in every case. And under Arizona law, which is a little different than the ADA, you're not supposed to be able to claim attorney fees. So we know that under the ADA, you can recover attorney fees because part of it is the goal of the ADA is you want folks to be in compliance. But Aid and their attorneys basically were entering into contracts where the attorney would agree never to charge Aid, and they would donate all those attorney fees back in a settlement to Aid. So I guess the summary of this is that Aid was really, I think, trying to make their attorney fees as high as possible because they knew that no one would ever pay attorney fees, but it would scare the folks that were alleged to not be in compliance into paying whatever amount they asked for. So we thought that that was very disingenuous as well, and that's another one of the reasons why we asked the court, and we have those pending motions for sanctions against the group. So the next step right now in these cases are we're gathering evidence, we're taking testimony to Aid's claims, their false claims and their false fees. There's going to be an evidentiary hearing actually in early November. After we And just so folks know, and usually we don't talk about a lot of cases when they're ongoing in litigation, this is a very important issue with national implications. Aid did file a lawsuit against my office claiming that we weren't doing enough to enforce the Americans with Disabilities Act or investigate complaints. I will tell you the lawsuit is meritless, and we've moved to dismiss it. And to this day, Aide refuses to swear to the truthfulness of their complaints they gave to our office. They basically dropped off, you know, 24 bankers' boxes worth of, you know, shabby complaints, Google Maps, and said, here, go to it. And their lawyer even claimed in the media that it would take us a year to go through them. But we were much more efficient than that, and we realized that many of these claims, once again, lacked any sort of merit or even serious. So we also, after this wave of lawsuits, one of the other positive things that we did is we worked with the Arizona legislature, and so the legislature passed an amendment to our version of the Americans with Disabilities Act, Arizona Disabilities Act, to tighten restrictions on who can bring claims. So plaintiffs now must have actually been subject to the discrimination or to the barriers. Plaintiffs must also swear that they've read the entire complaint, agreed to the allegations in the complaint, and that they're not receiving anything of value in exchange for filing these complaints. Second, the legislature allowed additional sanctions against frivolous plaintiffs. And third, and I think most importantly, the legislature added a notice and cure requirement before a private lawsuit can be brought. So remember, once a plaintiff has filed a lawsuit, a defendant really had no choice but to pay thousands in settlements dollars or pay thousands of dollars to the lawyer to defend this case. So what the Arizona legislature just ultimately did is to impose a notice and cure provision. And so if our goal is to ensure compliance with the ADA, what this allows folks to do is it allows a business, especially sometimes very small business owners, of 30 days to cure any alleged violations before anyone can file a lawsuit. And so basically, you know, we want to make sure that folks are in compliance and they're not just being brought into court to be shaken down. And finally, let me just add, why is this relevant and why is it relevant what we did? After we had initiated our original intervention or a motion to intervene in the original cases, 60 Minutes did a story on this. So this is something that's happening everywhere on a lot of different scales. But even this group here in Arizona Aid, they are continuing to file lawsuits in Nevada, Utah, Colorado, New Mexico. And in each state, you see a common MO where Aid personnel operates a business behind the scenes in a new name, for example, litigation management and financial services. And they sign confidentiality agreements with plaintiffs and lawyers in those states. Then at Aid's direction, these plaintiffs will visit businesses and the attorneys will file their lawsuits. And then on the surface, it appears they have no connection to Aid. But what we've seen, even in New Mexico recently, was there was 99 cases, I believe, that were recently dismissed. And as a result of those dismissals, it was discovered that Aid was once again behind these lawsuits and bankrolling them. So we've seen courts starting to wise up to these types of frivolous lawsuits. I know that one plaintiff in Colorado recently dropped a case after increasing public scrutiny about the case and her connection to Aid. But we do know that Aid is also working with other plaintiffs in Colorado. And so I think just even last week that a federal judge in New Mexico issued a report and recommendation exposing Aid's connection to an attorney and a plaintiff there and publishing the confidentiality agreement. So this pattern of serial lawsuits is going on. Not only, you know, I think we've tried to put a stop to it in Arizona, but we know that it's going on in other cases. And there are other folks that, you know, we've seen trends now where in other states where pool lift lawsuits are very popular, where someone will take a Google photo by air or a Google map photo of a hotel swimming pool, and they'll see that if they have the necessary lift, and if they don't, they will, you know, file a lawsuit. We've seen lawsuits dealing with restaurant counter heights, you know, starting to pop up here. And then, of course, we've even seen now website accessibility lawsuits where everything from access to ATM machines to access to websites where folks are alleging ADA violations because how the sites are readable and what impact those sites may or may not have on those that are visually impaired. So it's we're seeing once again a next wave of this because plaintiffs' lawyers see a real opportunity. So let me just conclude, and I don't want to go on too long. That's the problem, I guess, when you have an old litigator and I guess now someone who's elected to office talking. I don't want to filibuster here, but let me just kind of wrap up by talking about some guiding principles that I think we should all take away from this process. First, standing is an important limitation on government power and is an essential element of the separation of powers. Standing, using the principle of standing, it limits the ability of the legislative branch to make people subject to lawsuits. And without standing, the legislature can allow people to sue anyone for any reason. And with standing, the judiciary does its proper role by ensuring that people cannot be hauled into court unnecessarily by a plaintiff unless they have actually suffered an injury. So I think we need to continue to make that case, especially as classic Federalists, about the importance of standing. Second, statutory schemes should be focused on solutions and not just shakedowns or enriching plaintiffs' lawyers. Under the ADA, the use of, quote, alternative means of dispute resolution is encouraged, and that's within the CFR. So Arizona ADA has similar language. What happened to this notion that we wanted folks to get together, encouraging settlements, encouraging resolutions of problems, and avoiding litigation? And so that's another thing I think we need to focus on is instead of fixing blame, let's fix the problem. And so I think that in places like Arizona, we've set up an effective statutory scheme that once again emphasizes incentives to fix the problem and disincentives to litigate. I think that is good for everyone, not only small business owners, but also saves precious judicial resources, and also making sure that the Attorney General's office, if there's a civil rights violation or ADA violation, the AG's office, I believe, should have the first crack at resolving those cases before they end up in litigation. Third, I think that attorney ethical duties matter. A federal judge here in Arizona, Judge Wake, has questioned whether the lawyers involved were violating their ethical duties by asking for so much attorney fees and filing lawsuits without notice when the situation could have been resolved very likely with a simple letter or even telling someone, hey, your sign's too low or your ramp's off. So I think it's incumbent on state bar associations to put a stop to this type of frivolous litigation and sanction attorneys that are engaged in it. Because I do believe ultimately if the bar sanctions these types of plaintiffs, lawyers, they're involved in shakedowns and not helping folks, that it could help deter and stop this kind of behavior. And finally, the problem of ADA serial lawsuits is not going to be solved simply by having attorneys general trying to defend cases or jumping into court. The reality is that, you know, our office deals in everything from, you know, terrorism cases to filing cases against drug cartels to representing state agencies, you know, to filing amicus briefs in numerous cases. So we've got a very, very busy load here. Our lawyers do. And so, you know, we thought this was an important issue, and that's why we got involved. But I know that there are a lot of other attorneys general that maybe don't have the bandwidth or aren't fortunate enough to have folks with a lot of the necessary litigation experience to really go after these folks aggressively. So as I said at the very beginning, ADA lawsuits are up 150% nationwide. And so I think that we need to look at not only federal legislation, but even other states should look at state legislation that can positively and make a positive impact on reversing that trend. And so I thank you, Dean, for allowing me to speak here today. And if anyone's got any questions, comments, suggestions, as long as they're positive, I'm willing to hear them.
Well, thank you so much, Attorney General Mark Brnovich. Let's open the floor to questions. In a moment, we'll all hear an announcement that will say the floor mode is on. After you hear that announcement, if you have a question for our guest, you need to push the star button and then the pound button on your telephone. So once again, if you have a question for our guest, push the star button and then the pound button on your telephone. Before we begin the questions, let me make an announcement about our next scheduled Teleforum conference call. I don't get to say this often, but our next scheduled call will be later today at 4 p.m. Eastern Time. We'll be talking about the most recent developments in litigation on the immigration moratorium order. That is later today, 4 p.m. Eastern Time, at this same number. Of course, again, we're talking today, right now, with Attorney General Mark Brnovich. Push the star button and then the pound button if you have a question. We've got one question pending, then our lines are wide open. Let's take our first question of the day.
General Brnovich, hi. Appreciate your comments. My name is Bob Fitzpatrick. I'm an employment lawyer here in D.C., and I actually defend and prosecute ADA cases, so I'm fascinated by I do employment. I don't do the housing side. But I thought there was federal legislation in the hopper on this to try particularly to put that 30-day or whatever the time limit might be, cure period, in to try to get some control over these abusive public accommodation ADA cases. Could you tell us what the status is of the proposed federal legislation?
Indeed, I know that there has been notice and cure bills introduced in Congress every year for the last few years, but frankly, they haven't gotten a lot of traction. And I think that, once again, part of the reason why is, even here in Arizona, when the legislature was dealing with this issue, you have to be very sensitive to the fact that you don't want to, do anything that, you know, a lot of times, you know, folks in D.C. are worried about coming across as being, you know, against folks with physical challenges, or they're somehow, attacking people with disabilities. And so if people don't understand it, the issue, or they only have a superficial understanding, sometimes they're reluctant to move forward. So indeed, there have been bills introduced. They haven't got a lot of traction. And I also know that we've heard, as a result of some of the stories, including a 60 Minutes story, which, you know, if you saw the 60 Minutes piece, which, like I said, we had already been in the process of filing our lawsuits, intervening when that 60 Minutes piece ran. But if you saw that piece, I mean, how many times are they critical of plaintiffs' lawyers? And they were very critical in that case. And, you know, one of the things that folks have talked about is, you know, some of these issues where there's so much precision and detail, and the CFR is dealing with compliance with the ADA, you know, as far as, you know, degrees of ramp height, you know, how, like, once again, the signage, how high it is. At minimum, that's also a place to start, with allowing a little more flexibility to ensure that, once again, we're focusing on making sure that folks have the necessary access, that those spots are there, and that we're not in the process of arguing whether the sign, you know, needs to be 74 inches or 78 inches off the ground.
Well, I just strongly encourage those who are listening, and you, General, to keep up the good fight, and try a federal, if you will, in quotes, solution that at least imposes some obligation not to be what I call a drive-by shooter, to file a lawsuit and talk later, but give people a reasonable opportunity, particularly with these public accommodation issues, to resolve the problem when most of them, as you say, are insubstantial deviation from what the regs require. But that's just my two cents.
Well,
appreciate your comments, sir.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. And I will tell you that for people that are worried about the blowback, or I'll tell you, I cannot tell you how many times I have been out now since this happened. And what happened was, it got a lot of coverage local media wise here. In fact, the local ABC reporter ended up winning a regional Edward R. Murrow Award, and he's up for some national awards for his reporting on this and this serial litigation abuse. And so it got a lot of media coverage here, but we worked very hard to make sure that our side of the story, and I sat down with reporters, I did a lot of TV interviews to explain to them exactly what we were doing and why we were doing it. Really trying to frame the question as an issue of, this is plaintiff lawyers, it's plaintiff litigation abuse. It's not about really trying to protect folks with physical challenges, as they claimed. And I have been out so many places, unexpected places, where I might be at like a local coffee shop, and someone will come up to me, the owner of the coffee shop, and I'll be like, hey, aren't you the attorney general? And I'll be like, yeah, did I do something wrong? And, you know, be like, no, I just wanted to thank you. He goes, as a small business owner, I I can't afford $7,500 is a lot, you know. We're already operating on tough margins. And he goes, you know, I feel like you saved me, you know, an employee. And so I've gotten so much feedback like that. So I think that especially small business owners appreciate and understand, they don't have a lot of times, they don't have a lot of, you know, the margins that, you know, maybe, I don't know, some big hotel chain does to fight these. So for a mom and pop coffee shop or restaurant, you know, this could be the matter of survival or being able to hire that extra employee or not.
Well, this is Dean Royer. We do have two questions pending before we move on to the next caller. You mentioned two things, Attorney General Brnovich, in your remarks. One, the fact that this law firm seems to have moved on largely, and second, the idea that there's some professional ethics violations going on here. I'm just curious about that. Has anybody lodged a complaint? You said some businesses came to you lodging complaints. I wonder if any businesses have gone to the state bar lodging complaints about the professional ethics involved here, and if that's a way to shut them down more largely, or is that something your office would get involved with or not?
I know for a fact that several businesses have filed complaints, state bar complaints, against this law firm, and I do know that there's an I believe that I guess I'll be careful, but I do think there's open cases, and I do know that there have been complaints lodged by these businesses, and especially I think after we got involved, it really gave, I don't say the courage, but some of the businesses realized, like, well, wait a minute, there's something we can do. We're not helpless on this. And you know, when I'm out and about and sometimes I'm talking to folks, I say, look, the Attorney General's office, you know, very often we're the place of last resort for a lot of folks. And, you know, if we can step in and make people's lives better, we should. And this was an instance where I felt like we could use our office, the state, the role of government, to play a constructive and positive role. And that's what we did. And by doing that, I feel like the small businesses and small business owners felt like, well, wait a minute, we're not alone. We're not, you know, there is someone out there that understands that we're not bad people or that we're trying to do something bad and evil. And so I think that it really empowered them as well. And I think that's why it's important. It's almost, it's like a bully. Sometimes you just got to stand up to the bully, and the one person there in the schoolyard's got to say, no, you can't do this, and push back. And then, you know, the rest of the, you know, folks start saying, yeah, you know what? That's wrong. You can't do that. Get off the playground. And I feel like that's what's happened here.
Once again, if you have a question, push the star button, then the pound button on your telephone. Just two questions pending, then our lines are open. Let's head back in the direction of our audience.
Yes, Attorney General Brnovich. Good afternoon. This is Nick Malfitano calling from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, from the Pennsylvania Record. I just had one quick question for you, sir. Have you or your office contacted any other states' attorneys general about taking similar action that your office has taken in these ADA-related matters? And if so, are you able to discuss that in detail?
The short answer is yes. I have had some informal conversations with some of my colleagues about this issue. As I said, I think this is obviously a growing issue nationwide, and, you know, balancing the rights of those with physical challenges versus making sure that, you know, plaintiffs' lawyers aren't abusing the system. You know, I'm sure you know that the ADA, the federal ADA regulations, the standards were published in 2010. They're 280 pages long, and so I think it's time for, you know, folks to take another look at those. I feel like, while that is going on, though, us as state AGs could be more active, as I said, in what we did here in Arizona. So, yes, I have had some informal conversations with some of my colleagues. I'm also the upcoming chair of the Conference of Western Attorney Generals. So a lot of times, you know, when you're at meetings or the NAG meeting, National AG meeting, folks will grab you over a cup of coffee and they'll say, hey, how did you end up doing or dealing with this issue, or what do you think the best approach is, or how did you deal with, you know, messaging or whatever that question may be. So, yes, I've had some informal conversations with some of my colleagues.
Thank you very much for your answer, sir. Greatly appreciate it.
No worries.
Once again, if you have a question, push the star button, then the pound button on your phone. Just one question pending.
Hello, this is Lou Smith. I'm a Federalist Society member, and I have Question for the Attorney General. Can the leaders of this AD organization be charged with criminal offenses such as extortion and criminal fraud as well as civil fraud?
You know, right now we're in the process of trying to get sanctions against the lawyers. We're also, as I said, we were successful at getting, you know, more than 1,000, you know, lawsuits dismissed. But I will tell you, as an old prosecutor, I would never want to comment on any possible or ongoing or possible investigation. So I guess that's all I'm going to say now. And yeah, sorry, that's about all I'm going to say, so I don't get myself in trouble.
I have another general question. I don't know if you can answer it or not. Maybe I have to go through our attorney general, but we own a...
What state are you in?
Hello?
Yeah, Lou, what state are you in?
Maryland.
I apologize. No, I'm just kidding. Maryland's...
We own here in Maryland, and my wife is certainly falls under the ADA because she is in a wheelchair, and we've asked several times at the timeshare if they could install grab bars and do some other arrangements to make it ADA compliant. And we've been told by the management that they don't have to because it's a private community and they don't have to comply with ADA. Can you speak on that?
Well, two things. One is I don't know what as far as Maryland, what the AG's office duties, responsibilities, what they have, what they don't have. As I said, here in Arizona, we have statutory authority to help enforce the Arizona with Disabilities Act. And I'll give you one quick anecdote. We had a complaint from someone with a physical challenge that was having an issue. She was in a wheelchair and she had broken her arm, and she had gone to a private health clinic, and there was an issue with the door. She couldn't open it because of, you know, her condition. And what ended up happening is she contacted our office, and our office wrote a letter to the building and to the people there. And you know, she sent us a letter back a couple weeks later saying, thank you so much. They've now got an automatic door. And so, you know, very often as a state AG, you know, if you send someone a letter and you let them know that there's a possible violation, my experience has been is most businesses will try to address them. But the reality is, you know, I can't offer, you know, private legal advice. And once again, I'm not in Maryland and every fact situation is different. So what I would do is I would suggest that you call the Maryland Attorney General's office and see if they have any sort of duties or responsibilities, and you know, let them handle it.
Thank you, sir. I salute your efforts in Arizona, and I'm sure that the Maryland Attorney General is interested in this too. So thank you for your time, and thank you very much. Good day.
Thank you, Lou. Thank you very much.
Let me make another call for questions. Our lines are wide open now. If you have a question, this is the time. Push the star button and then the pound button on your telephone.
Attorney General. Right to the Maryland Attorney General.
We do have one more question. Let's check in with what might be our final question of the day. Go ahead, caller.
Hi. this is Walter Olson in Washington with the Cato Institute. And I had followed this issue and had followed the Arizona developments with great interest. There's another issue of mass ADA filing that is important in much of the country, which is lawyers have begun mass generating complaints against businesses' websites based on the idea of electronic lack of accessibility. And I wondered whether this had turned up as one of the problems in Arizona. Obviously, it poses somewhat different legal questions, but whether it was something that your office had had a chance to address.
The short answer is yes, and I did kind of allude to that in my comments. Arizona law, though, now specifically excludes that as far as website you know, accessibility. We did see that starting to happen. And so after the lawsuit started to pop up here in Arizona, the Arizona legislature added this issue to its amendments to the Arizona Disabilities Act. And now the Arizona Disabilities Act does not apply to these websites.
Okay, so they do not have a state cause of action. They might still have the federal appeal.
Yes, indeed. And so we do know that banks were being targeted, especially. We saw that. And I will tell you, Ilya Shapiro is a friend of mine, so tell Ilya I said hello.
I sure will.
Tell him I gave him a shout-out on the call.
Okay.
Ilya has, of course, been a guest at Teleforum before. Let me make another final call for questions. If you have a question, push the star button, then the pound button on your telephone. Attorney General Brnovich, it seems as though we've had our final question, at least for this call. Let me give you a minute or two to express a final thought, if you have one, if you want to wrap up.
Well, I will just say that I think we've covered a lot in this call, but this issue of how to deal with plaintiff's lawyers or unscrupulous plaintiff's lawyers, I should say. My best friend's a plaintiff's lawyer, so I understand, you know, the work that they do. But it involves not only abuses here with the ADA, but we're seeing it, I think, also, and a lot of times in class action lawsuits. One of the things that our office is working on in a bipartisan manner is really trying to look at settlements and major class actions. And if necessary, a state AG is objecting to those, because what we're seeing is the lawyers getting enriched at the expense of the people that they're supposed to be protecting in the class. And so in some ways, these ADA lawsuits are just the tip of the iceberg. And I think that we as state AGs have a role to play in ensuring that people get justice and justice is done. And sometimes that means us being proactive and getting involved in civil litigation.
Well, my thanks to Attorney General Mark Brnovich. Thank you so much for being with us today. I want to thank the audience as well for dialing in and for the thoughtful questions. A reminder that we have a special teleform later today at 4 p.m. Eastern Time at this same number. We'll be talking about the latest litigation developments on the immigration moratorium executive order. But until that next call, we are adjourned. Thank you very much, everyone. Thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed this Practice Group podcast. For materials related to this podcast and other Federalist Society multimedia, please visit the Federalist Society's website at fedsoc.org/multimedia.